This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
The goal of this podcast since day one is to provide the best information on the Vancouver real estate market at no cost to you, the listeners. To that end, we'd like to thank the following sponsors.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, today, Eric Bond from the CMHC joins us.
That's right. That's a Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, Adam.
Yes.
That is a Crown Corporation, the largest housing insurer in the country. The exciting thing about this is these guys do forecasts, right?
Yes.
And I believe it was Murtaza Haider,
right.
Very, very smart past guest who said, hey, those guys know more than me. They got more data than me, so I defer to the CMHC, and now we got Eric Bond on, talking specifically about the Vancouver real estate market over the next couple of years. It's an exciting conversation for sure.
It's a super exciting conversation, and you learn a lot about what the CMHC is forecasting for Vancouver. And actually, you'll probably have some takeaways about where you think the safe points in the market are, and maybe
some steady eddies for sure.
Where there's potentially some instability. We cover it all in today's episode, so we're really excited to have Eric on the program. But before we get to that, Matt, we have some housekeeping.
We have some housekeeping. First off, Adam, you and I we're numbers guys, but we don't look as much as we should, or maybe we do look too much at how many people are listening to this show.
Well, which one is it, Matt?
I'm not sure, but well, let's put it this way. I hadn't looked in a while. Turns out there's more people listening to this show than there were last year.
Yes.
By a considerable amount.
Yeah.
So thank you, everyone, for tuning in, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, Matt, it was really great seeing all the numbers, and the VREP community is growing. I know there's a lot of people out there who have been with us since day one, so I appreciate that. But welcome new listeners, and hopefully you're getting some value from our program. Matt, I just want to quickly, just before we get to some of the housekeeping here, next week's program is really going to be one to tune into as well. We've got the author of One Rental at a Time, Michael Zuber, on the program. And just to give you an idea, he's almost at 200 doors in 15 years, this guy.
Which is incredible.
He retired, and he bought his first property 17 years ago, and he retired 2 years ago. Isn't that crazy?
Not a bad run. Not a bad run.
And you talked to Michael by yourself. I haven't listened to this yet, but you were, I know I talked to you after, and you were excited. Yeah. Today's episode is definitely one for the books. And next week's episode, again, another one for the books.
We,
We're filling those books.
We're filling those books. And shout out to Jason, who was the one who put us on to Michael. That was a great recommendation. What else do we got before we cut to our talk with Eric Adam? We have the Sellers Club.
Yeah, we do have the Sellers Club. We're sending out exciting resources to get your home sold for top dollar to everybody on the Sellers Club list.
It's an exclusive club, but it's growing quickly.
It is growing quickly, and we've sent out some amazing resources like the sold plan, the get your home ready for market checklist. We also have some other checklists that are going out. But these are actually actionable plans that help you get your place ready for the market. And if you are thinking about coming onto the market, we can help you with that as well, of course.
That's right. What else do we got, Adam? Well, we got the Vancouver Real Estate Summit coming up this Saturday. There are so many.
I think we're almost 1,000 people.
Almost 1,000 people attending. There are so many exciting guest speakers. It's from 9 till noon. It's a Zoom meeting. It's free. The Vancouver Real Estate Summit. We sent out a couple emails, one yesterday again, about this. If you're interested and you're not on the LiveWire list, send us an email. Give us a call. We can get you hooked up with a ticket. The Vancouver Real Estate Summit. I think we go on at 10:15.
I think we do. We are coming live from the Bento Box as well.
We're back at the Bento Box. What's really happening in the Vancouver real estate market is the title Taylor gave us.
Yes.
And
now we gotta pack the skeleton.
That's right. We're working on it right now, but it's exciting stuff. And finally, Adam, before we cut to our talk, this podcast, the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast, is sponsored this week by Oakland Realty. That is our brokerage. Fantastic place to be. Great culture over there. Culture of learning, I would say, is one of the things. Yeah, one of education for sure. Very exciting place to hang your hat. So if you're a new agent, an old agent, a young agent who's 10 years in the business,
right.
If you're an agent looking to make a change, head over to oakland.com/join and type in VRP2020. That's
right.
oakland.com/join, VRP2020. Tell them we sent you. There's a huge gift waiting for you. Yeah. And
tell them you listen to the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
That's
Real estate. I don't know why they dropped the E. I still don't know.
Yeah, you know what? But hey, what really matters here is it's a great brokerage and you get a big surprise.
Right. Right. Huge surprise.
But maybe we should cut to our talk with Eric Bond. We've been going after the CMHC for a while, so it's so exciting to have the local CMHC economist and market analyst on the show.
I wonder if they still think we're the Financial Post. enjoy the episode, guys.
Okay, so we're here with Eric Bond, economist with CMHC and market analyst for Vancouver, BC. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time today, Eric.
My pleasure, yeah.
Can you start, Eric, by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
I'm a guy who likes skiing. I live in Kitts. I like going to the beach and I ride my bike around town. And yeah, I do a bit of housing stuff too, but.
If you eat sushi, you're every person in Vancouver.
No, I'm not a huge fan, but fair enough. I've heard we had good sushi here. Yeah.
And how long have you been with the CMHC as an economist?
So I've been with CMHC for just over 6 years. I joined the organization in 2014, originally covering the Victoria market. And I since moved to our Vancouver portfolio, and we are based in the Vancouver office as well.
Do you miss covering Victoria?
Yes and no. I mean, Victoria, I mean, I really enjoyed taking the float planes to the island when I had to go there for work. So that was good fun. But no, very, very different market actually in Victoria than Vancouver. But yet, you know, you still have the demand from elsewhere in the country where people are looking for that West Coast lifestyle and so on. And so some similar forces in that way.
Well, and in terms of differences, like I'd imagine at least any other market that we've watched compared to Vancouver, like Vancouver seems like a much more dynamic and fast paced market. But what in your mind are the kind of key differences between Vancouver and Victoria?
Okay. I mean, Well, I'd say the source of growth is probably one. I mean, you know, Victoria does have, you know, some young people, you know, migrating to the area, particularly students and so on. But there is a very large, you know, retiree demographic that migrates there. Vancouver is much broader in terms of its population growth, but actually it too is concentrated in younger demographics, particularly the kind of 18 to 44 non-permanent resident group. Which we can talk more about later if you like.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, otherwise, you know, both very interesting markets. There's a lot, I would say, a lot more wealth involved in the Vancouver market. The affordability challenges are also much greater, both in the rental market and in, of course, the ownership market.
Right on. So I guess if you've been watching for the past 6 years, Vancouver, maybe we'll start with, is the Vancouver real estate market healthy in your mind?
Okay, that's an interesting question. I mean, is it healthy in that it meets the housing needs of all of its citizens? I would say no. We have some serious challenges, you know, largely due to, you know, the fact that housing prices are, you know, very high relative to local incomes. In Vancouver, on a national scale, our incomes are pretty average, right? Our housing prices are definitely not. And, you know, that's okay, particularly relevant in the ownership market, but it affects everything else too. It affects the price of land. It affects the ability to do development. And, you know, it affects the affordability of the end product that you get from that development. So yeah, I'd say we have some challenges.
How will COVID-19 impact the Vancouver real estate market, in your opinion, Eric? And we should say you're a co-author of a special report, the summer report on Vancouver housing. So, in relation to your report, I guess.
Certainly, yeah. So, I mean, let me preface. I shouldn't say this, but you know, these are very uncertain times, right? I don't think anyone would disagree with that. But we, you know, we have an important obligation and mission to inform the market of kind of what we're seeing and to help people make better decisions. So we did, you know, take a particular view of the world and what's happening with COVID-19 and, you know, came up or derived a forecast, you know, for the major cities across Canada for the coming years. And so, you know, that forecast is based on, you know, the notion that employment, income and migration are major drivers of housing demand. And all three of those variables are going to be impacted by COVID-19. And so I can kind of walk through that if that'd be interesting to you guys.
Absolutely, yeah, please.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, the economic logic is basically that, like, if people lose their jobs and have lower incomes, and unfortunately some will, you know, we are in the midst of a historic recession, right? You know, they will have a lower ability to pay for housing, and you know, some people will therefore need to sell. And so those that are buying those that are buying on the other side will have a lower ability to pay as well. So that would lead to lower prices, or at least certainly limit price growth going forward. Meanwhile, you have less migration to Vancouver and other cities in Canada. You know, our borders have been closed for a couple months now. You also have less movement within province or between provinces within the country. And so, you know, there will be fewer people needing housing in general, right? We also have to consider for Vancouver our starting point. So we were coming off a historic high in terms of housing starts. So there's a record number of units underway. That is a cyclical business. And so we were looking towards, we're heading down a path towards lower housing starts before COVID-19 hit in order to allow some of that activity to be, basically absorbed by the marketplace, before then developers would launch new projects. And we also, of course, as I mentioned, have very high prices relative to local incomes, and we have the highest level of indebtedness of any city in the country. So that was our starting point. So In terms of our outlook and what we published in the report, we do see house prices moving lower. So this is the overall average MLS price, which of course contains a variety of home types and locations and so on. But as an overall measure, we do see that moving lower over the next 2 years, you know, about 8 to 16% lower by the end of that 2 year period. And that will start with a, you know, price decline of between 0.5 and 3% this year. And it really takes more hold in 2021 and then into 2022 before, you know, beginning to recover towards the end of 2022. Housing starts, we see moving lower as well. In terms of the numbers here, we see those declining by 18 to 60% in the second half of this year before beginning to recover next year as, you know, builders again move projects forward at a pace that's roughly in line with household formation. And finally, MLS sales, we have, you know, so far, you know, very thin volumes the last couple of months. And so we've seen a quite a dramatic decline in sales as, you know, people have had to self-isolate and so on. And, you know, that, you know, has started to recover in, you know, more recently. But overall for the second quarter, we are, you know, going to be quite a bit lower than Q1 of this year. We do see sales trailing off again. They may be recovering in the short term, but we do see them trailing off again, largely as those more economic challenges start to take hold. So sales recovering, you know, towards the end of 2021 in our current outlook.
So in terms of, so in thinking, Eric, before the recovery in, I think you said 2021, 2022, what are we expecting in terms of price declines then kind of overall for the Vancouver market?
So we, according to our outlook, we are looking at an 8 to 16% decline in the overall MLS average price over the next 2 years. So that's a total over the 2 year period. That begins with a 0.5 to 3% price decline this year and really accelerates in 2021, where it could be, you know, more to the order of 9 or 10%. That then brings us to that 8 or 16% over the next 2 years. There is additional uncertainty with that, and that part of that also depends on the composition of sales. And so we do see, you know, basically lower priced properties, so condominiums mainly in our region, making up a greater share of those sales going forward. And so that impacts your average price. That trend was starting long before the pandemic, but it will particularly continue as people have lower purchasing power over the coming years.
So sorry, I'm just a little bit unclear. In terms of property types, you're saying in terms of, I guess maybe I'll just put it as a question. How do you see different property types kind of weathering this storm, and which will perform the best?
Yeah, I mean, our forecast, we don't publish those details, but I can walk you through some of our thinking anyway. So, you know, in general, the detached market in Vancouver is largely, well, detached also from the local economy, right? It is a market that is largely driven by wealth, and that is, you know, people have accumulated equity positions and so on, and they're able to transact in that market, or they've brought wealth to the market that they've earned, you know, elsewhere or locally. You know, what we've seen so far in the last couple of months is that people have continued to transact in that segment. And so that's actually helped hold prices steady. You know, the share of properties, for example, in the 1 to 1.5 million range has increased since the beginning of the pandemic. Meanwhile, properties in the 300 to, you know, say 1 million range, they've seen a relative decline in market share. And those, of course, would not be single detached homes, but they've seen a relative decline in market share. So that's impacted prices in the short term, the last couple of months. The detached segment going forward, I mean, I think the very high end will continue to see the challenges it's seen over the last couple of years. Simply the buyers for those properties, particularly with their borders closed, you know, they important component of demand for those properties that won't be active in the market or won't be as active. And then in the main part of the detached market, it could actually be relatively stable, right? What will I think play into our outlook and what we're accounting for in there is that the share that the single detached market represents in the overall average price will continue to fall over time. Meanwhile, in the condo market, I mean, this is where, you know, there's quite a bit of uncertainty. And I think we'll start seeing some different trends, you know, greater differentiation based on quality, for example, than we have, say, in the last few years. And I can elaborate more on that later if you like. But it, you know, is really a situation where, you know, this is the segment of the market where people who have, you know, potentially now have lower incomes or they've lost their job. Initially, they're not going to be able to transact, right? You know, that's how we see sales falling. But later on, you know, they will perhaps only be able to transact in that segment. And so that's where we see a greater share of lower priced properties making up that average price. And so particularly if you have increased listings in the condo segment, we do see more activity going to that segment going forward. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think so. So yeah, it's interesting. I guess as a follow-up, it almost seems like you're thinking of the market and when I say you, I guess you and CMHC thinking in the market as almost the condo market and the detached market moving in entirely segregated spaces. Am I understanding that correctly? Like, it seems like if there's a potential for the detached market to remain relatively stable, and so far at least it seems like, yeah, the people that are getting hit worst by COVID are at that kind of entry level. There's not a lot of interplay between those markets.
Yeah, I mean, we have had, this goes back to 2015, 2016. I mean, we have talked before at CMHC about the notion that Vancouver is kind of a two-speed market, right? There is the single detached segment and there is the attached and condo segment. And so that distinction blurred a little bit over the last couple of years when we had weakness in the single detached segment, particularly in 2018, 2019. I think that kind of two-speed market, will come back simply because there is a segment of the market, the single detached market, where you basically, unless you have an existing equity position that you can bring to the transaction, you can't transact in that market based on your local income.
Interesting. So in thinking about the next coming months here, Eric, what are some of the key indicators we should be watching?
There's many. Not all of them have great data or higher frequency data, which is what we would like, right? Some of these are, you know, big economic indicators that you only get data points quarterly or annually, things like that. But a few things that we're watching are, of course, the three variables that we believe are kind of at the core of our housing forecast. So we are going to be very interested to see what happens to migration, both on the policy front. So do the borders open up again? What does that look like? Is the government going to maintain its immigration targets for the year? Is it going to increase them to try and make up for lost time? Things like that. We do get some migration data from Statistics Canada quarterly. Q1 of this year has been released, and we saw that for Vancouver, we had a negative account in terms of net non-permanent residents. So that's interesting. Those are your international students and other temporary workers, for example. That has traditionally been a, particularly the 18 to 44 year old group in that category has traditionally been a major source of population growth for our region over the last few years. So the Q2 data point for that, which now encompasses the shutdown period, so April, May, and June, will be out later this summer. And I think that will be very interesting to see just how the growth of our population has been affected by the drop in migration. And we're interested in that because that's linked to housing demand, right? Ultimately, people needing places to live. And if there's fewer of them arriving, and since our rate of natural increase is quite low, that's kind of your major source of demand for the region. On the employment front, we're going to be interested to see if job losses stay concentrated in the kind of tourism, hospitality, retail sectors that have borne the brunt of the losses so far, or if that actually spreads to other sectors, as kind of business confidence is affected by the pace of the recovery. So we'll be watching the labor force survey data as to, what's happening there. In the resale market, we are going to be interested in the pace of the increase in listings relative to the pace of sales. And so right now, I don't think the market is sending a convincing signal either way. We're operating on very thin activity, right? If we do see a sustained increase in listings that's faster than the pace of sales, that would point us in a direction that, we're moving towards more buyer's market conditions and hence a softer pricing environment. In terms of the new home market and new construction, we will, of course, be watching the pace of housing starts. We do collect the CMHC data on that monthly. So we've seen a bit of a slowdown over the last few months in housing starts, but we are, as I indicated, expecting starts to resume more towards the end of the year in the fall. And there are quite a number of projects that are essentially sitting at the ready, and developers are looking for the right time to launch those projects. I think there's also a reflection going on in the industry about the design of units and the design of homes as well, to allow for example, more flexible working space at home, or units that maybe have more outdoor space or access to more outdoor space. Whereas if we are kind of living in a quarantined environment for a little while, that those units would be more attractive to buyers, for example. The other part of the new construction market that we'll be watching is what happens with pre-sales, and in particular, whether and to what extent people are able to close on their existing pre-sales. So 90% of the, approximately 90% of the units that are set to be completed in the condo market over the next 2 years have already been pre-sold, but buyers will need to close on those. And so, so far, the industry report is that closings are working out. People are able to close. But if that changes, then that would, likely indicate some pressure on the condo market as well. Finally, just in the rental market, I think we'll be watching for an increase in supply, particularly in the condo rental market, as some investors who might have been renting their units short-term before on platforms like Airbnb and otherwise, given the decrease in tourism this year, they may have turned their units towards long-term rental. And so then if there is, an increase in supply there, that could lead to more choice for tenants and potentially lower vacancy rates and lower asking rents. We will also, in the fall, be doing the CMHC rental market survey, where the data will be available more towards the end of the year. And that for us will be a key annual data point in terms of vacancy rates and rents and the overall health of the rental market, and of course, how it has been impacted by the pandemic as well. So a ton of indicators, a lot of uncertainty, really. But the thread I draw through them is that, housing ultimately comes down to people. And what we've seen so far is that, at least in the short term, there's going to be fewer people needing a place to live. And so that will have an impact on our housing market.
Mm-hmm. Is just in thinking of, since mid-March and we're at the start of July now, I think everybody would agree that we've probably fared better than worst case scenarios with COVID, right? In terms of all these economic indicators that you're looking at, did you think we'd be in a better spot right now or a worse spot back in March, or exactly where we are?
Yeah, I don't know if I can concretely answer that, but I mean, just in terms of our outlook and kind of, you know, we give a range of to our indicators, right? And so kind of baked into that is, you know, kind of a better case scenario and a worst case scenario, right? I would say that, you know, we are so far, at least in BC, probably on track towards the better case scenario. I mean, this is a scenario where, you know, containment measures are relaxed, you know, according to plan, that, you know, economic activity can resume, that hiring resumes by businesses, and ultimately consumer confidence and business confidence are restored. The key part of that scenario where we haven't seen any movement yet is on the migration front. So we will need our borders to be open again, and we will need, you know, that, you know, increase in population to, you know, really put us back on a path towards growing housing demand. The alternative, like the less optimistic scenario, would be one where, say, we have, you know, other shutdowns, you know, say a second wave, things like that, and that really curtail economic activity and, you know, limit business and consumer confidence as well. And, you know, the future is, of course, uncertain, but at least in BC, I think we're doing fairly well so far.
Mm-hmm. Is it safe then? I'm just thinking back to the kind of the tale of two markets between the condos or the attached market and the detached market, Eric. Is it safe to say that the detached market, particularly in the not the super high end, but more the entry mid-level market, is the most resilient market over the next 2 years, in your opinion?
Yeah, we don't have an exact outlook, as I said, for like price segments or things like that. I might propose to you that might have always been the case. I'd have to go and look at some of the data, but I mean the entry level single detached market, you know, their buyers there place a value on having four walls and a lot and so on, right? As well as the interest in the land, right, on that lot. So I think there is, you know, a certain attraction to that will persist. You know, whether, you know, I guess it also depends what happens in other segments of the market as to whether, you know, people can continue to afford to move up into those homes, right? For example, they might have to sell their existing condo or a couple of condos. And if they can find buyers, great. If they can't, or if they get a lower price than they hoped, you know, that might limit their ability to transact in the entry-level single detached market.
And just thinking about the methodology that CMHC uses, do you look like regionally in Greater Vancouver, are there particularly, like, do you focus on sub areas, and are there any sub areas that perhaps are in your opinion going to be more stable kind of moving forward? Or do you guys look at maybe growth in sub areas? Like, we just actually, a lot of people have been talking about Squamish as an area that might be very busy now that people are working from home, for example, and buying habits might be changing. Any thoughts on that?
So our forecasting is done across the country at the census metropolitan area level. So here that's the Metro Vancouver level. So we do not, for example, have a forecast for Squamish versus Langley or, right, you know, condos versus singles in one of those areas as well. I mean, what I've been relating to you is kind of some of the things that, as a local office and in my own work, that I pay attention to, that certainly helps inform the forecast, helps inform some of the commentary on it. But at its core, you know, this is a macroeconomic forecast that is, you know, done by models. We have a team across the country, and then we apply local market intelligence to it. And that would encompass things like policy changes and so on. So we, you know, we didn't have as many of those to consider this time because, quite frankly, the pandemic economically impacted many cities across Canada similarly. So it is largely a macroeconomic forecast that is derived at the provincial level and then also at the local level, in order to incorporate, you know, the structure of different economies and price levels and things like that. To get to your question about sub areas of Vancouver where we might, that might behave differently, right? Earlier, I mentioned the idea that, you know, we might see a return to greater differentiation in terms of quality, right? Particularly in the condo market, I think, and that could be in terms of location, but also in terms of amenities and structure and so on, right? Or just the individual project. And so what I mean here is that, you know, over, for example, if you think to 2017, the condo market, you know, we saw, you know, quite substantial price increases in the condo market of about, you know, 150, 200,000. I'm simplifying here a bit, but basically price levels rose by a dollar amount kind of uniformly across the region. And so that's interesting because that was kind of an increase in the kind of, if you wanted to own, you had to pay that much more. And so for example, in Langley, maybe that meant the properties, you know, or the condo properties increased in value by 30, 40, 50% type thing. Whereas, you know, say in central Vancouver, that increase was less, but still, you know, a substantial dollar amount, right? Mm-hmm. So the floor increased because there was a great demand for ownership housing. We just might see that floor, you know, spread out a bit, and we'll also see greater differentiation between condos because no longer will people be looking to own anything, particularly if they're staying at home. They would like something that, you know, meets their needs and you know, maybe is in a, you know, a different location than they might have considered otherwise. So my point here is that if you were to pay, say, $50,000 more, you would get much more condo now than you would have in the past, like it used to. If in the past you had paid $50,000 more, it might not have made that much of a difference. Now it's, you know, it's going to, you're going to see differentiation between product, and that's how, you know, developers will be positioning their products as well. So I think, you know, more marginal products, the ones where, you know, maybe it's just you wanted to own something, so you bought there. You know, those might see some pressure, whereas quality product will likely see sustained or greater demand. Does that help?
That makes a lot of sense, because that's
okay.
We've been talking about that a lot, actually. Yeah. This idea that, in obviously in busy markets everything sells, but in softer markets you see the tier one product kind of move to the forefront, right? Now that buyers have selection. I think that kind of maybe ties in with what you're saying, where we're seeing right now, like it's people have more choice and they have the ability to buy kind of the premier product or the premier location.
Yeah, and it won't be that much more expensive, right? Or it hasn't been in the past, and now, you know, there's going to be some difference there.
Well, and just thinking about kind of gaps in the market and differentiating it between locations. And this is more just, you know, being in the CMHC office and being a student of the market. Previously, we talk about kind of downtown as being the epicenter and everything going out from there. But with COVID, now everybody's talking about potentially people wanting more space and things like that. Do you think that's actually going to take place, where people are actually, you know, the market kind of shifts away from density, walkability, and kind of push to the suburbs, like so many people are kind of suggesting?
I don't have a concrete answer for that. For those who are just listening, I'm smiling and laughing. But yeah, it's, you know, that is a very interesting question, and, you know, one that I think will take several years to play out. But I would actually more think of it in terms of that, is this now the time for mid-sized cities to shine, right? Will we see, you know, more people move to places like Nanaimo, for example, that are, you know, particularly geographically speaking, quite close to, you know, a larger city like Vancouver? Really, it's, you know, because the connectivity is there, they can work remotely, they can travel, you know, to a larger city in relatively short order. But yeah, they have lower housing costs and potentially, you know, greater choice, or rather you could get, you know, much more for your money in terms of, you know, either the type of unit or the size of property or so on. And so, yeah, what you're asking is, will this will this massive experiment that we've done with remote working fundamentally remake our cities? Yeah. It might. But I don't have the answer to that. My fingertips are.
Well, maybe actually, and it's kind of interesting, this idea of the mid-sized city, if it's a mid-sized city's time to shine. Can we talk a little bit about how Vancouver is going to compare to other major cities in the country, how it's going to fare, but also in relation to other, smaller to mid-sized cities?
In terms of the outlook, is that what you meant in terms of the outlook?
Exactly, yeah.
So there aren't, because our forecast rests on the, core principles of employment, income, and migration being key determinants of housing demand, and all of those variables across, or those three variables that all across the country have been impacted. There aren't in our forecast, very large differences between the evolution of different cities that we see over the next few years. In the grandest sense, there are some smaller differences in that. For example, in the Prairie provinces, Edmonton and Calgary have the added complication of the oil market being a significant employer in their economy, and with reduced demand for transportation and mobility, and lower economic activity in general. That market has very low prices right now, and that will impact employment rate. So that means that the impact on the housing market will be a little deeper and a little more protracted in those cities. In terms of comparison, say with Toronto and Montreal, I think it really comes down to where we started from as to the differences you'll see. So I talked a little bit about Vancouver earlier, and that we were starting, with high prices relative to local incomes and a high level of indebtedness also. We will see that play out in our housing market in terms of, price growth and so on. In Toronto and Montreal, they will have an impact there as well. In general, we see the prices, for example, in Montreal, because they were lower to begin with, recovering quicker and not having as deep of a pullback to begin with. But broadly speaking, if you were to take a thick marker to this, it's pretty similar.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of interested, and maybe this is kind of a final kind of track here in terms of questions, but in terms of forecasting, I think it's obviously a tricky business. I guess thinking about it from two angles here. One is, are you looking at any other time in the past as kind of as any sort of guide here with COVID? I mean, it seems like we're in a fairly unique moment. And forecasting would be incredibly tricky. Can you talk a little bit about how you guys have dealt with that, and also why it's important, why CMHC thinks it's important, or part of the mission to come out with kind of these longer term forecasts?
Sure. So I'll start with the last part of your question first. Maybe, I mean, we issue forecasts fundamentally to inform the market of what we're seeing and to help other people make more informed decisions, right? In doing that, we try to explain what our forecast is based on. I've touched here on how it's a certain worldview about housing demand being based on certain fundamentals of the economy, namely migration, employment, and income. And people can agree or disagree with that way of viewing the world. Ultimately, we do this, as I said, to help them make more informed decisions. And unfortunately, sometimes that means telling people news that they don't really want to hear, right?
There's got to be a lot of people in Vancouver that are excited with this news as well, right?
Sure. But in all seriousness, it's to give pause and reflection, as to, what actions you might want to take in the market, given the uncertainty and given that you know, at least we are saying that this is what we see or how we see that playing out. Right? So that's kind of why we do it. I mean, we're helping in doing so. We hope to help people meet their housing needs, right? And that they can, you know, transact in the market in a way that, you know, helps them find a home that both meets their needs and that they can afford, right?
Right. Just thinking about that, and I know I asked the other question, but just thinking along those lines, like there's often we think about the market in, you know, there's the fundamentals and then there's the psychology of the market, right? And the market in a lot of respects becomes kind of the stories you tell about it. Do you see there being any sort of relationship between what the forecasts and the fruition of those forecasts in terms of creating more uncertainty in the market?
Okay, so you're asking about expectations and the role of expectations in the market then, is what I understood. But certainly it's a factor, right? But it's very difficult to really say anything concrete about it because it's so individual, right? Each individual home buyer's or home seller's situation is different. Their objectives are different also. Some people like to speculate in the market. Some people see it as an investment, for example. Others are looking for a place to live and raise a family, right? All of these are permitted types of transactions in this, you know, free market that we have, right? So certainly, you know, people's expectations are formed, you know, by their own experience, by their own, objectives. And yeah, sure, by things that they might read and hear and so on, right? We don't, you know, allow that to, for example, hold back what we might say or anything like that, because we are, as I said, we see it as a central objective to inform the market of what we're seeing. Mm-hmm. People can use that information, however they will in their own situation and, you know, ultimately, hopefully, make a more informed decision.
Fair enough. And sorry, just to go back to the first part of the question about, is there any historical kind of precedence you guys are using to guide or is that even part of the analysis?
Well, I mean, we are using, you know, we have certain, you know, I mean, a lot of economic modeling relies on establishing the relationship between different variables or components of the economy over time. And so certainly we're basing ourselves on that. And that is, you know, where we, you know, rely on this idea that income, employment, and migration are all associated with housing demand, and you know, then housing demand is associated with prices and incentive for new supply, and so on, like that. Is there precedent for a pandemic in a modern open economy? Not really.
You know the answer. Yeah.
It's interesting, like. You know, you could try to compare it to, for example, 2008-2009, but that was a recession that began in financial markets, not due to a fundamental change or restriction in human behavior, you know, not being able to congregate, that sort of thing. So we are, I must say, though, that we are still in the very early days of this, right? So the parallels or the lessons with, you know, other recessions may become more apparent over time. What is interesting is there is one paper, if I forget the authors offhand, but who looked at the evolution of the housing market in Paris after the 1918-1919 pandemic. And, you know, they found that, you know, actually things, you know, did come back quite quickly once migration returned and housing demand increased, right? Or that population growth resumed. You know, I'm doing a vast oversimplification of their work, but, you know, it's pretty interesting. I found nonetheless that someone studied this in 1918 and 1919, you know, in terms of housing markets and the pandemic.
Right. Was that study done recently or was it actually done 100 years ago?
No, so it was done recently based on data collected from that time. And so, again, it's kind of interesting that they had that data and that, you know, they were able to obtain it or find it in some library somewhere, right? Yeah. But, yeah, it speaks to the important need to have good housing data And, you know, we have some data gaps in Canada for sure. And so the more we can fill those, the more we'll be able to, you know, understand and, you know, make more informed decisions.
And maybe as a final question, Eric, in thinking kind of long-term Vancouver real estate, maybe more kind of the 10-year kind of forecast, the CMHC, you know, we've reviewed a lot of the reports, but is there any kind of long-term forecast that you guys have put out or any thoughts on what the market looks like in the long term for Vancouver?
So we don't have a long-term forecast in terms of like housing variables, like house prices and so on. We do some more longer-term forecasting, and as does Statistics Canada and other agencies, on more the demographic side, right? Mm-hmm. So kind of what does population growth look like? And of course, the huge variable now being migration, right? That's been interrupted. But, you know, certainly the fundamentals in our view, I don't think have changed, right? Vancouver remains an attractive place to live, both on a national and international scale, you know, and certainly, you know, with our post-secondary education institutions as well, we are going to see demand come back to the rental market. We're going to see demand come back to the ownership market as our population continues to grow. So I don't think that part of this story has changed at all. How we meet the housing needs of all those people is, of course, a great challenge for our regional planners and municipal councillors and so on, and kind of what the industry is able to bring to market as well will determine ultimately what that housing market looks like, how equal it is, how accessible it is, and of course, how well it you know, meets the demand that we think will still come.
Excellent. We've got this this quick segment called the Five Wire, five quick questions about Vancouver. Can you stick around for that?
Sure.
Okay. So question number one, what is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
I think I know this one.
Yeah, you probably do. Well, I'm a big fan of Kitsilano. I've lived here for the past 8 years, and I, you know, I love being close to the beach. I love that it's a little cooler in the summer too, you know, being closer to the water, right? I love the outdoor swimming pool. I'm quite hopeful that will be opening again soon, and right. We'll see, you know, how comfortable of an experience that is, but I appreciate the efforts by the city to get those outdoor recreation things open again. And I quite enjoy this neighborhood.
I don't blame you. Favorite bar or restaurant?
Okay, so I'm going to push the definition of restaurant a little bit. I'm going to say Rain or Shine Ice Cream on West 4th Avenue. I mean, you could go there for dinner if you want, but it's not typically where I go, but it could be done. But yeah, it's, you know, it's just a great take on, you know, ice cream that they make right there, right? And, you know, they make good cones, and I'm an ice cream guy, so. Yeah.
Nice. That's the first time we've had an ice cream shop. It's,
there you go.
One book you'd recommend that all of our listeners read?
Okay, so your listeners are probably interested in real estate, so I'll talk about a real estate book maybe. What I'll propose is there's a book called The Wealthy Renter, and it's by Alex Avery, who's a Canadian author. It's a relatively recent book, so the analysis is... you know, I still think quite relevant, but basically this book, you know, whether you're interested in renting or owning or considering either one, what I found interesting about it is it lays out the mathematics of this, you know, what you want to consider, you know, for example, the old critique that, if you're renting, you're just flushing money down the drain, right? Well, no, that's not really the case. I mean, you know, when you rent housing. When you buy, you rent money to buy housing, right? That's what a mortgage is. So you can do some mathematics around that to kind of see, based on your objectives, you know, what makes the most sense. It introduces ideas like opportunity costs that maybe not everyone is familiar with, right? So you have, if you put a down payment and lock that equity up in your house, there's an opportunity cost associated with that, and that you can't take that money and invest it somewhere else. Things like that. So it's an interesting book because it doesn't come out one way or another as to what you should do, but it equips you with the tools to make those calculations, and then based on your values to decide whether to buy or rent or so on.
Yeah, that's a good one. Interesting. The wealthy renter.
The wealthy renter, not the wealthy barber, but derived from that, I think, yeah.
One piece of advice you would give your 18-year-old self?
There are many, but if I had to pick one, I think it would be to, and forgive me if this is a bit philosophical, but I think the earlier in your life you can do the hard work to figure out what you value, the more that can help you later on, right? Because if you know your values and you can articulate them, that you can then, I've ended up in some places where I wasn't happy before, and it turns out I was acting or doing things that were fundamentally contrary to my values, right? And it's hard to realize that unless you know what those are in the first place. So yeah, I would spend some time thinking about what you value, and it will guide you in decisions, or I would tell my 18-year-old self to use that to guide you in decisions else for the rest of your life, right?
That's a good one. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
And final question, something that you have purchased for under $1,000 that has positively changed your life?
So maybe thing I wished I had purchased for under $1,000, if you will, first would be about $1,000 of Google stock in 1998. But, since I didn't
change your life.
One thing I did buy earlier in my life for much less than $1,000, I think more like $60, was my first bicycle. It is, as a student, especially at that time, it's a great way to get around. And, since then I've had variety of different bicycles, had different bicycles stolen and, bought new ones and so on. But, I commute to work by bicycle. I have a car too. I take it skiing, but I don't take my bike skiing, but it's great for using, around town to get around, and active transportation, especially, in these times, if you just want to go outside and clear your head, bicycle is pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, no kidding. That's a good one. Well, thanks so much, Eric, for your time. And how can people find out more about the work you guys are doing, your publications, CMHC?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, we have a website. It's cmhc.ca. And on there, there's a wealth of information about how to buy a home. There's a home buying guide, for example, that can take you through the process if you've never been through it before. That we've heard is very helpful to people. We also have a research and data section where you can download some of the data that I've been talking about that we use in our forecasts, and then in the you'll also find our publications, such as our housing market outlook that I was just speaking about as well. So all of that is available on cmhc.ca, or you can also just search for CMHC Housing Outlook on Google, and that will take you to the report as well.
Well, thanks again. That was great. Maybe we can have you back 6 months from now and see where we're at.
It'd be very interesting, wouldn't it? Yeah. Thanks again. Yeah.
Thanks. Okay, thanks.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with economist and market analyst from the CMHC, Eric Bond.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Eric, Matt. He is a bright guy, for sure. No question there. And really just kind of took us through the predictions. Really well spoken.
Yeah.
You challenged them a little bit.
Well, you know what? It was what we always talk about here is the CMHC is a pretty big player in the Canadian housing market. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah. From all the noise that's out there, when the CMHC makes a prediction, people listen. The media picks it up.
That's right. So no, I think what we talked about there was just how do you think the CMHC forecasts shape psychology? And you know what? I think Eric was pretty clear on their take on that. And no, it was a fantastic conversation. I learned a lot, and so good having him on.
It's nice having guys like Eric actually at the helm, you know, because I do think that CMHC is doing a great job.
Bang up job.
Bang up job. And I also liked a lot of his live wire answers. Really good. Really the moral compass thing.
He's a thoughtful guy.
He's a very thoughtful guy. There's no question. For sure. What else do we have for today, Matt?
What do we have? Well, let's just say, again, it's Wednesday right now. On Saturday morning, we are at the Vancouver Real Estate Summit. This is, you don't even have to get out of your pajamas for this one. It's a Zoom call.
We're not.
It's free. There's almost 1,000 people apparently attending this. And there's 10 top-notch speakers. I think we're going on at 10:15. Our talk is what's really happening in Vancouver real estate. But, you know, some of the past guests are actually going to be there as well. Kyle Green's going to be there. There's a investing in self-storage talk. Dave Steele's there talking about 13,000 doors and how you handle that during a pandemic. It's going to be a really great morning. And what I like about these Zoom events is, you know, parking's free. And if you go for coffee and you don't come back, nobody notices.
And if we're boring, you just turn us off.
Exactly.
Just
exactly.
Go about your
That's
day.
Not the plan, though. That's
no.
That's not the plan.
It's not the plan. And you know what? I think this is one of the biggest turnouts they've ever had, actually, to one of these events. So there's actually still spots available, though. So if you want the registration link, we can send that to you. Just get in touch. Of course, we will send that over right away.
VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And if you're interested in that or anything else and you're not signed up to the LiveWire, mm-hmm. Shame on you. VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. You would have already got a registration link
right.
If you were signed up. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We have tons of resources there, including our back catalog. We have the LiveWire. There's Deal of the Month there. We're sending out stats that nobody else is sending out very quickly. We also have private client services.
Yeah, Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor-level information at your fingertips. It's free. It's available at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And really, it's the best way to look for real estate in Vancouver for sure.
There's no question about it. If you're not using PCS to search for Vancouver real estate, you're doing it wrong. And we should say, if you're interested in knowing what your neighbors are selling for, you're interested in selling your place, not only is PCS a good tool, but we also got that Sellers Club, and you can get that at the website as well.
We'll even do a market analysis for you, tell you what your place is worth. And last but not least, Matt, I just want another shout this out one more time. Next week, we have Michael Zuber joining us. The journey to financial independence through real estate is the topic of this conversation. He's got a book called One Rental at a Time. He went from zero to almost 200 doors in 15 years.
Just a and regular also, guy.
Yeah, and retired, I think, at 45. Says retirement was pretty boring, and now he's back on podcasts.
Is that right?
Well, you'll have to listen to find out.
Absolutely. If you want to talk about that, although I wasn't there, that, the summit, anything real estate related at all, give me a shout at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We also have that secret line, info at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And speaking of secret, Matt, he's actually going to make an appearance at the summit on Saturday.
It was the bento box. We needed the bento box back. We're back with Raimi at RaimiFilms.com.
Back with Secrets
there. I mean, this is
Secret. .com. What?
The secret.com, I think, is his site.
What actually, that would be my, at AshleyMadison.com? Like, what is the secret site?
Is it the secret?
Yeah, just Google secret. You'll find it.
Well, no. Email him at info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or try that. Have a good week, guys.
Take care.
2,000 Spaces for Radio.
Subscribe today.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.